Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we're looking at the Book of Genesis.
Oh, Genesis!
Yeah, it's a text that's been debated and interpreted for centuries.
It really has.
So we're going to be exploring it from a purely secular and academic perspective.
Okay.
And we're using an excerpt from an article called Scrutinizing Genesis, a secular analysis for this one.
That's right. And we'll be focusing on a few key things, like some of the historical claims that are made.
Okay.
The morality of some of the stories,
mm-hmm.
and how it all lines up with what we know from modern science.
Because there are some pretty stark differences there.
Right. There are. Yeah, you might be surprised to learn that there are actually two different creation stories in Genesis.
Two. I have to admit, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. One is the familiar six-day creation story,
right,
where God creates the world in a very structured step-by-step process.
Okay.
The other one focuses on the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden.
Oh, okay. So two very different approaches to the same event.
Exactly. And the article points out that both of these accounts really differ from our modern scientific understanding.
Yeah, that's where things get really fascinating.
It does.
We have evolutionary biology, which shows us that life on Earth developed, you know, gradually over billions of years.
Yeah, and that contrasts pretty sharply with this idea of a six-day creation.
Yeah, and then there's the age of the Earth itself, right? Mm-hmm. Science tells us that our planet's roughly 4.5 billion years old.
Whoa.
Much older than the 6,000 to 10,000 years. That's suggested by some interpretations of Genesis.
Yeah, these kinds of discrepancies raise some really interesting questions about how we even interpret these ancient texts.
For sure.
You know, what does it even mean for a text to be true if it clashes with scientific evidence?
Mm-hmm.
Does it diminish its value? Does it diminish its relevance?
Those are great questions, yeah. And it makes me wonder if other parts of Genesis might be at odds with what we know from science as well.
Yeah.
But beyond the science, there are also, you know, some moral and ethical questions that Genesis raises
right.
when viewed through a modern lens, right?
Yeah.
And the article highlights a few stories that stand out.
Okay.
Starting with the story of Adam and Eve.
Right. So that story introduces the concept of original sin.
Oh.
The idea that humans are inherently flawed
mm-hmm.
because of Adam and Eve's disobedience in the Garden of Eden.
Right.
Now, from a modern perspective, this might clash with the idea that humans are inherently good.
Yeah.
Or at least have the capacity for good.
It's almost like we're being held accountable for something we didn't even do.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
Makes you think about the nature of free will
mm-hmm.
and responsibility. Right.
Exactly.
Is it even fair to blame all of humanity for the actions of two individuals?
It's a complex question.
It is.
That's been debated for centuries.
Yeah.
And it highlights the challenges of applying modern ethical standards to an ancient text.
Mm-hmm.
But Genesis doesn't stop there. Another story that raises moral questions is the story of Abraham and Isaac, where God commands Abraham to sacrifice his son as a test of faith.
Oh, wow. I can see how that story would be disturbing to a lot of people today.
For sure.
Child sacrifice is something we view as morally abhorrent.
Absolutely, from a modern perspective.
Yeah.
The story of Abraham and Isaac raises serious concerns about child protection and the nature of blind obedience.
Right.
It forces us to confront the potential dangers of unquestioning faith, even when it comes from a divine authority.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if there are limits to what we should be willing to do in the name of faith.
Yeah.
Even if we believe in a higher power, should we always obey, even when it goes against our own, you know, moral compass?
Those are important questions.
Yeah.
And it's not just the Abraham story. There's also the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, where God destroys these cities because of the wickedness of their inhabitants.
So God punishes entire cities for the actions of some.
Right.
That seems pretty harsh.
It does raise questions about collective punishment and how we define justice.
Yeah.
And remember, our understanding of sexuality and morality has evolved so much since the time Genesis was written.
Of course.
So applying a modern ethical framework to this story can be challenging.
It sounds like there's a lot to unpack when it comes to the morality portrayed in Genesis.
There is.
But the article also delves into some historical inconsistencies within the text itself.
You're right.
Right.
And one of the most prominent examples is the story of Noah's Ark.
Okay.
While it's a compelling story about this great flood that wipes out almost all life on Earth, there are a few things that make us question its historical accuracy.
Like what?
Well, for starters, there's no conclusive archaeological or geological evidence to support the idea of a global flood as described in Genesis.
So you're saying it might be more of a symbolic story shared across different cultures rather than a historically accurate account.
That's a possibility, yeah. It's also important to note that the historicity of figures like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the patriarchs of the Israelite people, is also debated.
Really? I always thought those figures were considered historically verified.
Yeah.
What makes their historicity questionable?
Outside of the Bible, there's very limited evidence to support their existence. So historians are divided on whether they were real individuals whose stories were later embellished, or whether they were entirely fictional characters created to serve a theological purpose.
This is all incredibly fascinating. It seems like every layer we peel back reveals even more complexity and nuance.
It does.
And speaking of complexity, the article also points out that Genesis even contains some internal contradictions.
Yes, that's right. And perhaps the most obvious example is that we have two separate creation accounts right at the beginning of the book, each with its own order of events and details.
So in one story, humans are created before plants and animals, but in the other story, it's the reverse. That seems like a pretty significant discrepancy. What are we to make of that?
Well, it could suggest that these two accounts were originally separate traditions that were later combined,
Okay.
or it could indicate that the authors weren't necessarily concerned with perfect internal consistency.
That makes me wonder if there are inconsistencies in the creation stories.
Yeah.
Are there other contradictions that we might find elsewhere in the text?
There are definitely other passages that raise questions.
Such as.
For instance, the story of Cain and Abel. Cain offers God a sacrifice from his crops. Abel offers a sacrifice from his flock. God favors Abel's offering. Cain kills his brother in a fit of jealousy. It's a tragic story that raises a lot of moral and theological questions.
It does. Like, why would God seemingly favor one brother over the other? And why punish Cain for acting on emotions that were seemingly provoked by God's own actions? It's a tough one to reconcile.
It certainly is, and these sorts of apparent contradictions can make it really difficult to interpret Genesis from a purely literal perspective.
It sounds like approaching Genesis from a secular perspective opens up a whole new way of thinking about the text, its meaning, and its relevance to our lives today.
It does.
But I feel like we've only scratched the surface here. There's still so much more to explore.
Definitely. You're absolutely right. There's so much more to uncover. We've talked about how certain stories in Genesis might clash with a modern understanding of morality. But what's interesting is that many of these stories actually revolve around similar themes, particularly when it comes to the concept of justice and punishment.
Oh, that's an interesting connection. I hadn't thought about it that way. Which stories come to mind?
Well, we've already touched on a few. You have the story of Adam and Eve, where their disobedience in the Garden of Eden brings about sort of cosmic punishment. Not just for them, but for all of humanity.
The idea of original sin. It's like we're all implicated in their actions. It makes you think about the ripple effects of choices and whether we're truly responsible for the sins of our ancestors. What are some of the other stories?
Well, then you have the story of Abraham being commanded to sacrifice his son Isaac. Now, ultimately, the sacrifice doesn't happen, but the very idea that God would even ask this of Abraham really raises questions about the nature of divine justice.
It does.
Is this a merciful God or a capricious one?
It's almost like a test of faith taken to the extreme. And it makes you wonder if Abraham had gone through with it, would it have even been considered a righteous act or a horrific crime? How do you even begin to reconcile those two perspectives?
It's a difficult question for sure. And then we have the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, which really highlights the idea of collective punishment. Entire cities are destroyed because of the actions of some of their inhabitants.
It makes you think about how far we've come in terms of our legal and ethical systems. Today, we generally believe in individual accountability. You're not punished for someone else's crimes. But in Genesis, it seems like that line is a bit blurred.
It is. And this idea of collective punishment is further complicated by the fact that the crimes being punished in Sodom and Gomorrah are often interpreted as being related to sexuality.
It's often seen as a story about divine judgment against what were considered deviant sexual practices. But as we mentioned earlier, our understanding of sexuality has evolved considerably since the time Genesis was written.
Exactly. What might have been considered sinful or taboo then might not be viewed the same way today.
Of course.
So how do we reconcile those changing social norms with the idea of an unchanging divine law?
It's a question that continues to be debated.
It does.
Even today.
Yeah.
And it speaks to the ongoing challenge of interpreting these ancient texts through a modern lens.
Mm-hmm.
We're constantly bringing our own values and perspectives to bear.
Right.
Which can lead to some fascinating and sometimes uncomfortable insights.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's not just about the clash between ancient and modern values. There are even inconsistencies within Genesis itself when it comes to these themes of justice and punishment.
You're right. We talked earlier about the two different creation accounts.
Yeah.
But there are other examples as well, right?
Yes. The story of Cain and Abel comes to mind.
Okay.
Cain kills his brother out of jealousy after God seems to favor Abel's sacrifice over his own.
Right.
God then punishes Cain by making him a wanderer on the earth.
That story always struck me as particularly complex.
It is.
On the one hand, you could see it as a straightforward case of crime and punishment.
Right.
Cain commits murder and is punished accordingly.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, God's apparent favoritism towards Abel seems to set the stage for the tragedy.
That's a really insightful observation. It raises questions about free will versus divine intervention.
Yeah.
Did Cain truly have a choice in his actions?
Hmm.
Or was he somehow driven by forces beyond his control?
It makes you wonder about the nature of responsibility and whether we can truly be held accountable for our actions if a higher power is influencing our choices.
Mm-hmm.
It's a philosophical conundrum that theologians have wrestled with for centuries.
It is. And these sorts of complexities are woven throughout Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
We see characters grappling with ethical dilemmas,
right,
facing divine judgment,
mm-hmm,
and questioning the nature of good and evil.
It's no wonder this text has had such a lasting impact.
Right.
These stories continue to resonate with us even thousands of years later,
mm-hmm,
because they touch upon universal themes of human nature.
Right.
Morality.
Mm-hmm.
And our relationship with the divine.
Exactly. And while we might not agree with all the moral judgments presented in Genesis, there's no denying the power and complexity of these narratives.
Yeah.
They force us to think critically about our own values and beliefs, even if we're approaching the text from a purely secular perspective.
So we've seen how Genesis presents a variety of perspectives on justice and punishment,
mm-hmm,
both within individual stories and across the text as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reminder that even ancient texts can be nuanced and multifaceted,
mm-hmm,
offering different layers of meaning for us to unpack and grapple with.
Absolutely. And while we've focused quite a bit on the moral complexities of Genesis,
right,
it's important to remember that one of the initial points of interest was how the text aligns with our modern scientific understanding.
You're right. We talked about the discrepancies between the creation accounts and modern science.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to hear more about the historical aspects of Genesis.
Okay.
Does it hold up as a reliable account of past events?
That's a great question, and one that scholars have been debating for a long time. The article we're looking at today highlights a few specific narratives that raise doubts about the historical accuracy of Genesis.
Okay.
One of the most prominent, of course, is the story of Noah's Ark and the Great Flood.
Right. We talked about that earlier. But what specifically makes historians question the historical validity of that story?
Well, for starters, there's no conclusive archaeological or geological evidence to support the idea of a global flood. As described in Genesis.
That's a good point.
You would think an event of that magnitude would have left behind some pretty significant traces.
Mm-hmm.
But those traces just haven't been found.
It makes you wonder if perhaps the story is more symbolic than literal. Is there anything else that casts doubt on the historicity of the flood narrative?
Yes. The Genesis account of the flood shares striking similarities with other ancient flood myths.
Oh, really?
Like the Epic of Gilgamesh from Mesopotamia. These parallels suggest that the flood story might be a common motif across different cultures.
Interesting.
Perhaps reflecting a shared human fascination with themes of destruction and renewal.
That's fascinating. So while the Genesis flood story might hold spiritual or allegorical significance, its historical accuracy is debatable.
It is.
Are there other stories in Genesis whose historicity is also in question?
There are. The historicity of the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is also a topic of ongoing debate among historians.
Really?
They're considered the founding fathers of the Israelite people. But outside of biblical texts, there's very little evidence to confirm their existence.
So are we talking about real people whose stories have been embellished over time?
Potentially.
Or are they purely fictional characters created to serve a specific purpose?
Right.
How do historians approach this question?
It's a tricky question, and there's no easy answer. Some scholars believe that these patriarchs might have been based on real individuals who lived in the distant past.
Okay.
But their stories have been heavily mythologized over time.
So like a game of historical telephone, where the story changes a bit with each retelling.
Right.
But what about the scholars who believe they're entirely fictional? What's their reasoning?
They argue that the patriarchs are primarily literary creations, designed to convey theological or moral messages.
Okay.
Their stories, they say, are more about conveying ideas about God, faith, and the origins of the Israelite people than about historical accuracy.
So it's like trying to decipher a historical novel. You're never quite sure where the line between fact and fiction lies.
Exactly.
It sounds like separating history from mythology in Genesis is a pretty complex task.
It definitely is. And it reminds us that even texts that claim to be historical accounts can be influenced by the cultural and theological biases of their authors.
It makes you wonder if any ancient text can truly be considered objective, or if we're always looking at the past through the lens of the present. But even with these questions about historical accuracy, there's no denying the impact Genesis has had on our culture and how we think about the world.
You're absolutely right. Genesis has shaped religious beliefs, cultural norms, and ethical frameworks for centuries.
For sure.
It's a foundational text that continues to influence us in countless ways, whether we realize it or not.
I think we've covered an incredible amount of ground today, delving into the scientific, moral, and historical aspects of Genesis.
We have.
All from a secular perspective.
It's been a fascinating journey for sure. We've seen how this ancient text, despite its complexities and contradictions, still speaks to us today, prompting us to ask fundamental questions about our origins, our purpose, and our place in the universe.
It's amazing how a text written so long ago can still spark so much debate and reflection today. You would think after centuries of study, we'd have it all figured out.
That's the beauty of these ancient texts. They resist easy answers. They challenge us to think critically and to engage with them on multiple levels, historically, scientifically, morally, and even spiritually, regardless of one's personal beliefs.
I like that. It's about engaging in the conversation, not necessarily arriving at a definitive conclusion. And speaking of conversation, I wanted to touch on something we discussed earlier, the internal inconsistencies within Genesis. We talked about the two creation accounts, but are there other examples that stand out?
There are quite a few, actually, and they often revolve around the same themes we've been discussing: justice, punishment, and the nature of God. For instance, we talked about the story of Cain and Abel, where God seemingly favors one brother over the other, leading to a tragic outcome.
Right. And it raises questions about whether Cain was truly responsible for his actions if God was playing favorites. Are there other stories that raise similar questions about God's role in human affairs?
Well, the flood narrative is an interesting one to consider in this context. God decides to wipe out almost all of humanity because of their wickedness. Now, you could argue that this is simply a case of divine justice. People were behaving badly, so they faced the consequences.
Right, a cosmic reset button. But it also raises questions about the extent of God's power and whether such a sweeping act of destruction could ever be considered just, especially from a modern perspective.
Exactly. It makes you think about the nature of free will and whether humans truly have the capacity to choose good over evil if God is ultimately in control. And these inconsistencies aren't just limited to individual stories. They're woven into the very fabric of Genesis.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we've talked about how Genesis seems to present different perspectives on morality, justice, and even the nature of God. These varying viewpoints might be the result of the text being compiled from different sources or oral traditions over time.
So it's not necessarily one cohesive narrative with a single authorial voice.
That's right. It's more like a tapestry woven from different threads, each with its own texture and color. And that's part of what makes Genesis so fascinating to study. You have to engage with the text on its own terms, recognizing that it contains a multiplicity of voices and perspectives.
It's like trying to solve a puzzle where the pieces don't always fit neatly together. It's challenging, but it also makes the process of discovery that much more rewarding.
Exactly. And even though we've been approaching Genesis from a secular perspective, I think it's important to acknowledge that it's a text that continues to hold deep spiritual significance for millions of people around the world.
Absolutely. And that's something we should respect and appreciate, even if our own engagement with the text is more academic or analytical. So as we wrap up our exploration of Genesis, what are some key takeaways that you hope our listeners will walk away with?
Well, I think one of the most important takeaways is that even ancient texts like Genesis can be approached from a variety of perspectives. You don't have to be a theologian or religious scholar to engage with these texts and find meaning in them.
Right, it's about asking questions, challenging assumptions, and being open to different interpretations. And even if we find inconsistencies or contradictions, that doesn't diminish the value or the power of the text.
Exactly. In fact, it's often those very inconsistencies that make these texts so compelling. They force us to think critically and to grapple with the complexities of human existence, morality, and our relationship to the universe.
I think that's a great note to end on Genesis, even when viewed from a secular perspective. Continues to challenge and inspire us, inviting us to engage in a conversation that has spanned centuries and continues to this day.
Well said. And to our listeners, as you continue your own exploration of Genesis, remember to approach it with curiosity, an open mind, and a willingness to embrace its mysteries and its contradictions.